clerk will call the docket.
Chair Administrator Albert, Virginia Health Services, Gary Corner, Junior Health Council, Davis, and Frank Jerry, Jason, and Scott, and Scott.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, Avery T. Waterman, Jr. for appellants. I reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. I incorporate all points in brief that I did not reach in oral argument. I'd like to begin by emphasizing that in 1996, when the regulations were reenacted, the Virginia Register noted that the purpose was to protect nursing home patients, and it repeatedly refers to them as patients, not residents. They're identified as vulnerable. This is important because that means that Gerda, in this case, and James were members of a vulnerable class who were designed to be protected by these regulations. And it also means that these regulations, as remedial, are to be construed liberally. We have proceeded in these consolidated cases under the Declaratory Judgment Act. We are explicitly entitled to do so under 801-184. That says, among other things, that it is the jurisdiction of the court for interpretation of governmental regulation, which is what is before us.
May I interrupt you with this question?
Yes, yes.
But the underlying problem is whether or not these regulations create an implied right of action. And though the subject is characterized as a question of subject matter jurisdiction, it doesn't need to be. Is there, in fact, an implied right of action for a private citizen to enforce an administrative regulation that doesn't otherwise have a right of action statute attached to it?
Your Honor, I believe that we can pursue this entitlement. This particular regulation, which derives from statute, provides an entitlement to these residents.
No doubt, and if the agency disciplined or withdrew the licensure of the nursing home, or for that matter, the agency pursued its own action for injunctive relief or specific performance, but does that mean that a private resident, former or present, has a right to file a separate action to enforce this? I mean, generally speaking, regulations are not enforced by private lawsuits.
To be clear, this is not an enforcement action as such. This is not a civil action for monetary damages. This is not a civil action for injunction, of course.
You asked for specific performance. That's a form of injunctive relief. It cannot be awarded by a court of law. It can only be awarded by a chancellor.
We did pray. Our initial prayer, Your Honor, was for a declaration of the meaning of the interpretation. Collateral to that, we did ask for consequential relief in the form of the court order. We have, in fact, abandoned that on appeal, that is, the latter portion of asking for the consequential relief. We are before the court today strictly asking for the court to interpret the meaning of resident in this particular case.
So there'd be no relief. We just write an advisory opinion on this is what we think of the regulation.
It's not an advisory opinion, Your Honor. It would be definitive opinion as to the meaning, as to the interpretation of resident. If going forward, this particular nursing facility and or others didn't honor that, then perhaps, probably, the board, the department, the attorney general would proceed with enforcement proceedings against the nursing facility.
Well, the statute itself actually reads that the Virginia Declaratory Judgment Act vests in circuit courts the jurisdiction to make binding adjudications of right, and it talks about what they are, and at the end it says, and other governmental relations, regulations. But it seems to me that the statute itself actually covers what you're talking about, and the question is, what is the definition of resident? And does it include former residents and their representatives?
Well, yes, sir. That certainly is the position of plaintiff appellants. As to that, Your Honor, we have listed half a dozen different reasons. This is a plain meaning. And when you look at not simply the word resident, but look at it in the context of the other provisions, the companion provisions, the only reasonable interpretation, the plain meaning, is that residence means current and former. Much has been talked about 150D, and while the opposition says that we cannot, according to them, read in former, the reality is they're the ones that are reading in current, and alternatively, reading in the words incoming and existing. That's impermissible to add language like that. Further, 150D, as I pointed out in the reply brief, derives from 31.2138, which specifically, the underlying statute, authorizing statute, speaks in terms of patients. The opposition has conceded that patients under the code refers to current and former patients. They did so in the context of 8.01.413, but if it means it there, then it means it elsewhere. We can't have patient meaning two different things under different provisions. And we look at other sections in 32.1, such as the confidentiality aspects of it. Certainly, patient confidentiality means that not only of the current patients, but also former patients. Otherwise...
But do you actually have to go there? I mean, can't you resolve this within the terms of the statute here? I actually was rather amused and impressed by the Virginia trial lawyer's amicus brief. It says that if the term residence means residence currently in residence, then the phrase residence currently in residence would mean residence currently in residence, currently in residence, currently in residence, currently in residence. Isn't that the crux of your argument, that it can't possibly just mean that?
I understand. Yes, we've made that argument, and we've made multiple other arguments, including looking at the companion sections of 140D, 11 and 15, which again speak in terms of residents, in terms of their confidential information and their clinical records. How can residents not mean former residents? Does that mean as soon as a resident ceases to be a resident of the nursing home, it's open hunting season to pass out their confidential information, to pass out their clinical records with impunity? Of course not. Of course not. Further, Your Honor, we have cited the Kentucky case where this precise issue came up before the court in Kentucky, and they found that the plain meaning necessarily included former as well as current. The posture of that case was slightly different in that the plaintiff in that case was proceeding in the cause of action that was expressly provided by statute, but it doesn't change the fact of how they interpreted the word and the meaning in the case.
So let me return to the first question. What is your cause of action? Because a declaratory judgment action, the declaratory judgment statute does not create any cause of action. It creates a remedy for what would otherwise be a cause of action that would otherwise be premature because it was not ripe. So what is your underlying cause of action? Is it law? Is it injunctive relief? Is it contract? Is it some sort of enforcement of a statute or a reg? What is the cause of action?
It is the entitlement to review the policies, Your Honor. We are vindicating that. We are vindicating that particular right. And there's no question. There's no question here about there being a right for review of policies. The only question is whether these particular plaintiffs or deceased resident patients are within the class of people, whether they are residents as intended by the regulation and as intended by the underlying statute.
Well, to put it more specifically, is it a declaration of rights under a statute?
Yes, sir.
Declaration of rights under a statute. There's four words. It's a whole lot easier to express that than what you said.
Let's play it forward. Hypothetically, you get these records. It shows that the practice or that the procedures of the nursing home were definitely violated and to the detriment of your client. At that point, you would be inclined to file an action based upon the statute or an action under common law in tort.
I'm sorry, under which?
If you get this information and you believe that there is an injury caused to your client by the nursing home violating its standard of care, would you, or violating the statute, would you intend to file an action based upon the statute seeking damages for your client or based upon common law in tort seeking damages?
You file a medical malpractice action in common law.
Okay. And so if you did not get these records, then you would be having to make that decision about filing a medical malpractice action without truly knowing whether, in fact, there was malpractice. You would have to essentially go out on a limb to do so in order to get the records in discovery afterwards.
Well, certainly we have less information. The survivors in this particular case, as a threshold matter, may not even seek counsel, or if they sought counsel may be uncertain as to whether to proceed further. It's also information that a reviewing certifying expert presumably would like to see in making a decision on the case as to whether or not there was a violation of the standard of care, which of course is required before we can serve any. Mm-hmm.
So in other words, by getting this information, you are able to, number one, vindicate the rights that may have been violated, as well as pursue judicial economy.
Absolutely. And we should not be in the position, because of this statutory, regulatory right of entitlement on mere request, we shouldn't be condemned to go out, have a lawyer retained, seek experts, file suit, serve suit, get embroiled in discovery, and get the policies, or maybe, depending on the judge, not get the policies down the road, still being an open question under discovery whether policies are discoverable, let alone admissible.
So do you think...
You take
the position that every time the word residence is used, it actually refers to former residence as well. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. How do you deal with 150E that says the nursing facility shall have a plan to review resident rights with each resident annually? That means the nursing facility reviews the rights with every former resident annually too?
Well, I see your point, Justice. What I'm saying is that in the big picture, overarching, that resident means former and current. In a given section or subsection, the particular reading or context may in fact pertain only to the current, if that's the context, but that other things clearly embrace both.
You had wanted to save some time. You have a minute and 30 seconds left.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Joe Rainsbury for the Appley Virginia Health Services. I'd like to begin the presentation this morning with a discussion of the jurisdictional issues, which I believe are foundational, and then I'll turn to the interpretive issues on the meaning of resident. And before I start my main presentation on jurisdiction, I'd like to address a point that the Chief Justice made about the declaratory judgment statute and its reference to the interpretation of statutes and regulations. It's true that that's what it says in the Declaratory Judgment Act, but this Court has been clear that the Declaratory Judgment Act doesn't create a cause of action where one otherwise doesn't exist, and our position has been there's no private right of action, and so simply filing this as a DEC action does not create a private right of action. In addition, this really is not a...
But as the questioning indicated, it allows one to determine, is there a private right of action in malpractice that can be pursued? It could be that you get the records, you find that there was no violation of policy, and therefore a private right of action is not pursued, thereby advancing judicial economy, that you don't have...
Well, I understand, but this is a structural point, that you can't even get to that legal issue because there is no right of action. There's no right to come into court to have the court decide this. This is an administrative regulation. This is something that the Department of Health has been charged with enforcing. It's a regulation that they've created, and they should be the one to interpret it in the first instance and to apply it.
But if they don't, cannot a private party try to determine, was the standard of care violated?
Well, a private party certainly can bring a malpractice cause of action.
And if so, they would get this exact same information after the action is brought. Is that correct?
Well, they would only get some of it because the policies and procedures, it's a vast document. It's not a three-page pamphlet. It's hundreds of pages. And they cover the gamut from things from social occasions to cleaning. A very small part of it has to do with the things that might be raised in a medical malpractice action. So they wouldn't get the whole thing. If it's discoverable, yes, it would be discovered in a medical malpractice action. But that doesn't create a private right of action to bring this, to enforce this regulation in certain court.
Well, if somebody makes a FOIA request, not particularly in this case, but somebody makes a FOIA request, we don't say to them, well, I'm sorry, you don't have a private right of action. What you have is a statute that says you have the authority to do it.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And in this case, what they have is a regulation, and whether there is authority to ask for it, and whether it applies to residents that are only currently there or past residents, is what is the issue that is before the court for resolution. But nobody would say you don't have a private right of action under FOIA to defeat it.
Yeah, then that's because the General Assembly has created a private right of action under FOIA.
Well, I think that sort of begs the question in some respects. Isn't that what the General Assembly and giving regulatory authority to the Board of Health has done here?
Absolutely not. What the General Assembly has done is it's given the Board of Health licensing authority over nursing homes. As part of that licensing authority, the Department of Health has issued regulations that govern all aspects of a nursing home. And the Department of Health can enforce those licensing regulations in a number of different ways. They can revoke the licensure. They can come into circuit court under the statute and bring an action for an injunction. They can seek civil penalties. But noticeably absent in the statute is anything that allows a private citizen to come in and enforce these licensing regulations.
But what about the language of the regulation itself? It says copies of resident rights shall be given to residents upon admission to the facility, et cetera, et cetera. What does that have to do with licensure? Nothing. What does it have to do with current oversight? Nothing. So what to say that the fact that it doesn't have anything to do with licensure, et cetera, begs the question. The language says copies of residents' rights shall be given to residents upon admittance to the facility and made available to residents currently in residence, etc. I don't understand your argument. If you confine it just to licensing, what does that have to do with licensing?
Well, if you look at the portion of the administrative code of the Board of Health's regulations where this appears, this is the set of standards that a nursing home must adhere to in order to maintain their licensure. So it absolutely relates to licensure in as much as nursing homes have to do this in order to maintain their license. And this is akin to a rule of professional responsibility for lawyers. Lawyers have to maintain certain ethical obligations. But that does not mean that their clients can come in and bring a private right of action to enforce a violation of one of those regulations. And
if a current resident asks for this and the nursing home says no, then their remedy is to go complain to the Department of Health for some kind of administrative action.
Absolutely, and that actually appears in the regulations under Section 70, and it talks about complaints and how the Office of Licensure and Certification
We'll take these complaints, we'll investigate them. If it finds that there's merit to them, we'll contact the facility and ask for some sort of remedial action. And if they're not happy with that, then they can take action against the nursing facility, including up to revoking the licensure.
And interestingly, under the Court versus Ash implied right of action standard, the availability of administrative remedies is a leading factor to determine whether or not the regulation of the statute implies a private right of action.
Well, absolutely, yeah. So patients are not left without a remedy. They just as clients can file a complaint with the bar, residents of a nursing home or the administrator of the estate of former residents of nursing homes can alert the Office of Licensure and Certification that, look, there's been a violation of these regulations. You ought to take action, either to revoke your licensure or to fine them or to seek an injunction. But ultimately, the prosecutorial discretion, if you will, it lies within the Department of Health.
Well, where is the remedy who determines what the word resident means under your scheme?
Well, it's the Department of Health's regulations.
All right, so walk through this with me. If the person who's no longer a resident disagrees with that interpretation, where does that person go?
Well, the person first would go to, I mean, they would go to the Department of Health, and you're saying the Department of Health does not agree with that.
Right.
Okay.
So
well,
are you saying they don't have a declaratory judgment action at that point?
No. I mean, any more than a client of an attorney would have a declaratory judgment action to determine what the meaning of the rules of professional responsibility.
So your answer would be that they would have administrative appeal rights, and they'd go through the courts as an appeal from an administrative body.
How it would appear would be as an appeal of a licensure decision, or it would be an action by the Department of Health to enforce one of these rules or regulations. That's how it would be brought to the court.
Or it would be the resident making an appearance as an interested party in the APA proceeding and then having standing under APA law to accompany the case in the circuit court for APA review.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, these regulations are subject to the APA, and so they would have the right to come in and make their position clear in the court. So they would have a voice in this.
Are you aware of other regulations that expressly give a private citizen some kind of enforcement right, either in this specific context or other contexts?
In the context of the regulation of nursing homes, I'm not. I know that...
Because if there are parts of the administrative code where the agency says a private citizen can go forward, and it's not present in this context, that might speak to what was contemplated in terms of a private action.
Sure, sure. I believe in consumer protection statutes, typically you will ask...
I'm talking about regulations, not statutes.
Regulations promulgated under consumer protection statutes would have that. I mean, ultimately, jurisdiction can only be conferred by either the Constitution or the General Assembly. So it has to be in a statute somewhere. The cause of action has to be created in the statute somewhere. And that's why we focused on the statutory provisions in our brief. And the testatory provisions in this case only allow rights of action to the Department of Health. And there's no mention of any private right of action by a private citizen. So, and, you know, the court needs to recognize that if it allows a private right of action to determine the meaning of this regulatory provision, the court really is going to open the floodgates to litigation. The Virginia Administrative Code...
Walk me forward.
Sure,
how
sure.
Will this open the floodgates? This is simply saying, what does one word mean?
There are a lot of words in the Virginia Administrative Code.
This particular action is for one word that is important and is not defined, and where whether it's current or all, including former, really does seem to be an equipoise. I mean, we've talked about patient, we've talked about Kentucky, we've talked about various other things, but... There is a gray area with regard to this word. Why cannot a court say, here's the definition. Act upon it as you may see fit.
The jurisdictional point would be a broad one. The jurisdictional point would be that a party can come in and ask the court to state the meaning of an administrative regulation in the absence of any indication by the General Assembly that it's a private right of action to do so. The Administrative Code is voluminous. It has tens of thousands of different
regulations for different industries. So if the court allows a private right of action here, it will basically create tens of thousands of private rights of action to do interpretation.
Do you really think there's tens of thousands of people that are going to line up waiting to spend thousands of dollars getting into circuit court in order to figure out what various terms mean simply because they're curious?
Oh, no, because they have vested interest. Absolutely. There are industries that are affected by regulations. You have maybe utilities who might be interested in knowing what the meaning of,
they're generally pretty good at going to the General Assembly and getting definitions, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, if they can go to court, that's even better, because court's always in session.
So is your position that the Declaratory Judgment Act, which gives them the right to have a declaration of other governmental regs, is really limited to when that governmental reg gives them a private right of action? Is that your read of the Declaratory Judgment Act?
Yes, because the Declaratory Judgment Statute cures ripeness. It doesn't cure lack of jurisdiction. It doesn't cure the lack of a cause of action.
But no, as well, because you can have a cause of action, and the interpretation of a reg may be relevant to the cause of action. You may have a contract action. Contract incorporates reg XYZ.
Sure.
You have a cause of action, but it's not ripe yet because you haven't gotten damages. You go in with a deck action, and you say, here's what my contract says, but it incorporates this weird reg, so someone needs to interpret that reg. So you have a cause of action, you have a declaratory judgment remedy, and you can, of course, in the process, interpret anything, for that matter.
Absolutely, and not only that, but I mean, if somebody brings a negligence per se action, which hinges on the meaning of a particular statute that meets the requirements of negligence per se, it may need to be interpreted in a declaratory
action. So, let me stop right there. In this instance, the underlying cause of action at common law is going to be negligence. Medical malpractice.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Excuse me? Your opposing counsel just said...
Well, the cause of action is to obtain these records. Now, what they later intend to do with that is a separate question altogether.
Yeah, okay. Well, but I asked, what if you get these records, what are you going to do with them? And he was quite candid. We're looking at filing a medical malpractice action. And frankly, that wasn't news.
Right.
Okay, so... Your argument is you cannot use the Declaratory Judgment Act if your underlying cause of action that you will file subsequently is negligence, but you can use it if your underlying cause of action that you will file subsequently is negligence per se.
No, that's not what I said. The difference is what you're calling underlying cause of action is not really an underlying cause of action for this DEC action. The underlying cause of action for this DEC action is the action to recover these records, which really isn't a declaratory judgment action at all. It's an action for injunctive relief.
That's been waived, hasn't it? That's not in front of us right now.
Well,
merely the declaration in front of us.
But then, as Justice Kelsey pointed out, it just turns it into a request for an advisory opinion. Or under the declaratory judgment jurisprudence of this court, it's a request for an adjudication of an issue rather than a resolution of an issue.
If this court were to say residence includes former residents, would your client then say, well, sorry, that was an advisory opinion, we're going to ignore it? Be careful how you answer that.
Well, the client will follow the order of the court,
okay.
Absolutely.
So at that point, it's not advisory. At that point, the declaration has, in fact, caused the parties to act accordingly.
It's a resolution of an issue that's isolated from the remainder of the dispute, which should be brought to...
Has the agency...
The agency.
Does define this term?
The agency has defined the term, and resident is the primary person receiving services who has been admitted to the facility.
So we're not in an APA context. We don't have an official interpretation of the agency to which, according to our precedent, we defer. We're ahead of that.
Correct.
Let me ask you this question before you sit down. I've heard all your arguments, and they're good ones. There's no question about it. What does the statute mean, however, when it says the Virginia Declaratory Judgment Act vests circuit courts, it didn't say administrative agents, circuit courts, with jurisdiction to make binding adjudications of right in controversies involving the interpretation of deeds, wills, and other instruments of writing, statutes, municipal ordinances and other governmental regulations. What does that mean to you?
Well, I believe it continues, and it says, notwithstanding the fact that it couldn't have been brought as a common law cause of action, because it's not right. The whole point of the declaratory judgment statute is to enable parties to have an adjudication of rights before they hazard liability.
And doesn't that presuppose that there's a right to be adjudicated? So if there's a governmental regulation that deals with a right, then of course you can get that adjudicated through a DEC action. But if you don't have a right to begin with, there's nothing there to pursue.
But the right, if you don't have a right of action in circuit court to begin with,
a right, period, that might give rise to a right of action.
You have to have a cause of action in order to bring a DEC action. That's the inverse of that cause of action. And in this case, it's not a DEC action because all of the water is under the bridge. This is not a case where somebody is worried about a course of action and needs an adjudication of right ahead of time. There's been a request for the records. That request has been denied. And so the issue is ripe, and the issue should be brought before the Department of Health, not before the Circuit Court.
All right, thank you. Your time has expired. Mr. Waterman, why don't we start where your opposing counsel left off? In a nutshell, he is saying, and he may be right, that the Declaratory Judgment Act does not create a right. It only allows a method of determining rights when they are when there's a cause of action that brings it to the court and it's in conflict. What do you say about that?
The regulation, the underlying statute, creates the right. It says that that these policies shall be provided upon request. Many of the other, virtually all the other standing and subject matter jurisdiction cases cited by counsel do not feature that kind of right or entitlement. They are regarded typically ordinances where there's a prohibition or a limitation on another party, and then the other party comes in and tries.
Let me focus you a little bit on this one. What he's saying is that if the regulations created a cause of action, the Declaratory Judgment Act would be a proper way to get it. But these regulations do not create a cause of action. That's what he's saying.
Well, there are a couple of, in Your Honors, in the court's B&W Black and White Cars case of 1994, that was a penal statute, and nonetheless, this court found standing, and this court granted an injunction.
Why have you waived your claim for an injunction?
My time has expired, but I'd like to answer your question. Because I thought the cleaner issue was the declaration.
Well, if you're right, if your legal theory is right, you're entitled to an injunction. So it seems conspicuous to me that on the eve of an oral argument in an appellate court, you say, okay, I'll give up the injunction.
Let me be very clear, Your Honor. We have never, ever sought an injunction.
Okay, specific performance.
There's a difference in kind, Your Honor, between asking for, after the meeting is declared, saying that we ask for it to be ordered versus an injunction. And the Declaratory Judgment Act in Section 801-189 specifically says declaratory judgment actions are not grounds for injunction. They make a material difference between injunction on the one hand and consequential relief on the other hand. The Act also says under 191 that Declaratory Judgment Act is to be declared immediately and it is to be liberally interpreted and administered, which is what should be done in this case.
All right, thanks. Your time is expired.
Thank you.
Call the next case.
Miller and Rogers.